This is Stories Worth Sharing from the Church of England. Phil, in your blog, you talk about being brought up in a Christian family but drifting away. Can you talk to us a bit about the experience of church as a child and kind of what made you decide, actually, this might not be the thing for me initially?
I went to a Methodist church and the children were taken out every Sunday. We actually went into a big wooden hut at the back of church and it was totally boring. It was colouring in Noah's Ark and the animals every week just got monotonous. And it was my mother that said to me, if I could find something better to do, I could do it. So I was playing rugby at school, one of the few junior schools in the area that I lived in West Yorkshire that actually played rugby union and not rugby league. And through the coach there, I got involved with a local rugby club playing rugby union, and we played Sunday mornings. So that was a good excuse to move away from church. Yeah, more excitement playing rugby than what there was actually going in a little room to colour in Noah's Ark and all the animals.
Sure, sure. And you speak about leaving school with no qualifications. What was your experience of school and that whole part of your life?
Right. I left school with no qualifications. Later on in life, I found out that I was dyslexic. I enjoyed school, but the comprehensive system that I went through, like a lot of people, it didn't cater for people with difficulties.
Okay.
I didn't play truant because, again, at senior school, because I've been playing rugby all the way through junior school and played at local club level, I was involved with the school rugby team, and that gave me a purpose. If you didn't attend school, you couldn't play for the school team. So my whole life at that time was probably centred around playing rugby.
You go on to talk about working as a scaffolder and earning lots of money, but before that, potentially looking at going into the army. But can you talk to us about how that ended up?
Yeah, because I had no qualifications, when I left school, the government had just introduced the Youth Opportunities Scheme. So they were pressing for people to go and do a sort of an apprenticeship. But I'd seen the local army recruiting officer and he, you know, persuaded me that the army was a good thing. Again, a big draw to the army was the fact that I could play rugby while I was in the army. But the way that my birthday falls meant that I couldn't go into the junior army because I was too old, but I was too young to go in the senior army. And the recruiting sergeant just said, get yourself a job to tide you over about 6 months. And I did. I ended up getting a job working in a scaffold yard just as a labourer. But because of my physical build and size, I'm quite tall. I've always been big for my age as a child. I was soon going out helping with the scaffold gangs, and we got paid by the job. It was like a contract work, and the lead scaffolder was given a price for the job, and he split it between the number of labourers that he wanted on that job. So I was fit, strong, willing to work. So I was out working long hours, but for the first time in my life, I had money, which was a novelty to me. And then when it came round to going in the army, the thought of being paid less and there was news of trouble in Northern Ireland, I thought, well, I'm happy doing what I'm doing. So I continued doing that. The one thing that I do regret that period of my life was the fact that because I was working so long, I wasn't playing rugby.
Right.
That had sort of slipped.
Okay. So you're kind of, you're working long hours of the day, you're earning lots of money, you're going out and spending the money in the evenings, going out drinking, and then you get into this, there's this fight in a pub that you're at, and you talk about it as an event that really made a difference in your life and made you think about things. Can you just talk to us about what actually happened and what was going through your mind?
Yeah, as I was getting older, I, like most people, learned to drive. Had the money to get my own car. I am originally from Sheffield. I've got family roots over there and friends over there. So on my time off from scaffolding, I was going over to Sheffield, drinking heavy. And we sort of got into the culture of... myself and a few friends start fights in pubs. Sheffield was very easy because during the football season, these two home teams, and you know, you could guarantee that on any Saturday that there was a football match going on in the city, either if Sheffield Wednesday was playing at home or Sheffield United, and we'd go in and just cause trouble in the local pubs. This one particular Saturday, we'd been drinking heavy, middle of the afternoon, a fight broke out in the pub. The friend that I was with, a bit worse for wear for drink, so I took him out of the pub, went back in to find out that somebody had been stabbed. And the realisation then was that I could have been the person stabbed. Or even worse, I could have been the person using the knife. And it was a sort of a big wake-up call. And I came out of that. And I was just into my early 20s, sort of taking stock of my life and realised that I had no real prospects. I was still working as a scaffolder, earning good money, but I was drinking that money away, and scaffolding being a very physical job, it's not a job that you could retire into. And so it was a really big wake-up call, I think.
So you have this event where you're kind of reflecting on your life and what you're doing and what you might be planning to do in the future. You then take up a job as an HGV driver, and you're doing kind of specialist haulage around the country. And it's during one of these driving trips that you hear something on the CB radio when they were in use by the truckers. What did you hear? What was it about? What impact did it have on your life?
Right. Well, say it was that period when I was reflecting on my life, and I decided a career change from scaffolding to heavy goods driving. And I was still going through a period of searching. Obviously, the drinking had stopped because you can't drink and drive heavy goods vehicles. And I was still missing something in my life. And this particular night, I was doing a night shift run up to Glasgow. I was going up the M6, just past Lancaster. There's a place called Carnforth, and there was a big truck stop there. And you say at the time, CB radios were the in thing. The local vicar was doing a pause for thought, and he was talking about Psalm 113 and 116. And the thing that really spoke to me, I think, was Psalm 113 talks about the Lord is high above all nations, and his glory above the heavens. And it goes on to talk about the Lord who looks down and sort of knows everything. And I think it was really verse 7 of Psalm 113 that really spoke to me, where he says, I think the words are something like, he raises the poor from the dust and lifts the needy from the ash heap. And I realised that I was that poor person in the dust that sort of needed lifting up. And then he went on just to talk about Psalm 116. And that starts off with a plea from the psalmist. You know, he starts off that, you know, that person loves the Lord because he has heard his cry for help, basically. And that really, really spoke to me. You know, I was the person making that cry. I needed help to sort of put my life back together. And that's all, as I was driving up the motorway, I only caught a very brief portion of that. That was in about 90 seconds, a minute and a half, before I was out of range. But the rest of that journey, this idea that I could shout out to the Lord and would be raised up in my hour of need, really, really played on my mind. So I came back and decided that I would go to the local churches just to see if I could find an answer to these questions that I had.
I mean, what's quite amazing is that, of course, this vicar who was speaking out on the CB radio broadcast, he wouldn't have known that you were listening. He wouldn't have known that you would have heard, you know, just this brief extract of the pause for thought, and yet it's had such a profound impact on your life.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the vicar not knowing, and yet it's almost changed your life completely around and brought you onto this new calling, what would you want to say to that person?
First of all, it would have to be a very big thank you, because that was the point when I look back now that really turned my life around. And from that point, from being in a position of despair, a very dark place, that was the turning point that brought me back into what I've got now. And from that point, I've been so blessed. A wonderful wife, two wonderful children, doing or living the life now with so much purpose. That wouldn't have happened if that person, that vicar, hadn't gone out and done that CB broadcast. If he'd have thought, I'm going to do this, and it's probably not going to reach anybody, so there's no point, I wouldn't be where I am today. I might be in prison, I might be dead, might be an alcoholic. But the fact that he gave up some time just to talk about God's love, not knowing if it was going to reach anybody or not, but just actually being obedient and answering his call to spread the gospel has affected my life. So from that point and later on in my Christian journey, I've always remembered him going out and sharing that. And yeah, he probably doesn't know that it had an impact on my life. But I would still like to think that he still kept doing that that slot week in, week out, just in the hope that it would reach somebody.
It's just such a fabulous testimony in that, you know, he probably doesn't know the impact of the words to your life, and that we can't always know the impact of what we say and what we do, but it's certain to have an impact somewhere, somehow. And I mean, that's just fantastic to hear. Now, in the early 1990s, you were involved with the Diocese of Wakefield initiative to kind of run mission all over the diocese in many different ways. You talk about being feeling called to be an evangelist, and people keep mentioning ordination to you, but it's not something that you necessarily immediately think, I can do, I have the skills to do. Can you talk to us a bit about how that journey unfolded and ended up where you are today?
Yeah, I think that journey started, again, because I realised what that vicar had done for me, how he had gone out and spread the good news. And if what he did could turn my life around, I felt indebted to do it to somebody else, you know, give them the chance. Because all it was for me was the fact that I'd not heard the gospel message. You know, I'd missed out on that when I was in church, and not being in church while I was playing rugby. I'd missed out on that. So if I was out there, there would be other people out there. So I went, when I was asked to go on the jigsaw mission to Chester Diocese with the Bishop Nigel McCulloch, I said yes. It frightened me to death. But the experience of that week away was very positive for me. I learned a lot about myself, having faith, stepping out in faith, and I wanted to do more. I got involved with an organisation called Through Faith Missions that organise missions across the UK. And during the years of doing that, it's been a privilege to go out and preach the gospel message. And again, I don't know how many people I've reached on those missions. I hope that there's some people out there that remembers this wagon driver from West Yorkshire that came on a mission to their church and spoke to them. But I at my home church, we had a change of vicars. The new vicar came in, and she invited me to preach. And because she knew that I was going around the country preaching at different churches. And I said yes, did a couple of really good sermons based on evangelism and outreach. But then when I was asked to preach again and given a different topic, I found out it was a lot harder. And that vicar encouraged me to do reader ministry. Now, in the back of my mind, that was academic. I don't do academic. But the church as a whole, people in the church saw something in me and supported me. There was a retired headmistress, retired teacher. They agreed to help me. And they were the ones that suggested that I got tested for dyslexia, which I did. I didn't know anything about being dyslexic. Went for an assessment, came back and found out that I was dyslexic. So that was taken into consideration when I did the reader's course, and I thoroughly enjoyed that learning process. Still not convinced that I was called to ordination. And at the end of my exploratory year, I was interviewed to see if it was reader training or ordination. I was adamant that it was reader training, The panel suggested that I might look at ordination, but I was a bit stubborn, I suppose, and still went for reader training. Qualified as a reader, and again, the vicar that we had at the time, she said, right, you're a vicar, you're a reader now. You will do everything that is part of reader ministry, such as funerals, leading house groups, preaching, and the pastoral care of the congregation, which wasn't my idea of what I'd signed up for, but I did it. And during those 5 years as a licensed reader, I felt this pull to ordination, as though I wasn't quite fulfilling what I'd been called to do. And I got to the stage where, I had to answer the call, and I ended up having an interview and was recommended for ordination. Still convinced that it wasn't the right thing for me, so I was going to do a self-supporting pathway. So I would still drive and then fulfill my role as an ordained person when I wasn't driving. But after the silent retreat weekend that we had in my first year of training, I was challenged by everything. The person that led the retreat, who was a brother from the community of the Resurrection at Murfield, and really challenged that weekend, came back and a lot of prayer, and realised that no, I was called to stipendiary ministry. So I went and asked if I could change from self-supporting ministry training pathway to stipendiary ministry pathway. And the principal of the training college that I went to, she said to me, yeah, I've been expecting this. It's about time you realised that you were called to stipendiary ministry. So
there was a plan all along.
Yes. It was just me that didn't know it.
It's often the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're going to be ordained a priest on June the 25th this year.
Yeah.
What would be the one piece of advice that you would give to anybody, no matter who they are, no matter what their age is, no matter what they're doing now, who is exploring, considering, or even has that small niggle in the back of their head about maybe this is something that I should be doing or I should be exploring? What one piece of advice would you give them?
Step out in faith. I suppose I've learnt the hard way that God never asks you to do something that you can't do. It's usually ourselves that hold us back. And we're all called because we're all different. We all have something to offer. And it's usually ourselves, our self-confidence that says we can't do that, when actually we can. Through prayer and, say, that faith that we had answering God's call, it will happen. And I this last year as a curate, as a deacon, I've been amazed at the things that I've done that I never thought I would be doing, but I've been so blessed, really blessed. And if I'd have still kept my own fears about what I was being called to do, I wouldn't have experienced that.
That was a story worth sharing from the Church of England. Thanks for listening.